D&T was just like, it's just like this robbery where it's just all of a sudden this person comes up and then just mugs you and takes your money. And you're like, oh, but this person seems sweet. Like Esper Vile is like a bank robbery where you have like 20 people and you got a guy in a car outside and they're just like, you know, this guy working the door and this, it feels like that. Like, yeah. It just seems all good when a bunch of people in masks come into a building, which I guess now is like totally fine.
Herder thinks a pencil strikes. Ain't their fire ticking up to three? Recruiter finds a melon age. I just force your critical spell. Esper Vile not control. If you're playing combo, win rate will be low. Cause my deck can't let you cast your spell.
Hello and welcome to the Canadian Threshold, the Legacy podcast that's just blazing away our opponent's elemental tokens. My name is Quinn Amori. Oh, wait, we're recording on 420, but I guess it won't come out on 420.
I was going to say, unless you're real quick on the editing.
Yeah.
All right. Well, people have the context now. as I was saying, I'm Quinn Amori. I'm here as always with my co-host, Jeff Kinsey.
Hello.
My co-host, Brendan McBain.
Hey, Quinn. Hey, Jeff.
We are joined with a very special guest today. All the way 3 hours down the highway, 2.5 if you're speeding. South.
Not legal to travel.
Not now. unless you have family or a commercial, whatever. Anyways, from Seattle, Mr. Jack Vanilla. Jack, welcome to the podcast. Thank you for joining us, man.
Oh, no. Thank you guys for having me. This is an absolute pleasure.
We are going to get into Jeff's, one of his favorite topics, Esper Vile, because Jack is ninth in the latest energy series, just below the cut. So he's gonna tell us some ins and outs. He can maybe tell Jeff if he really needs to invest thousands of dollars in birds or not. He's shaking his head no, so that's a good sign for Jeff. But before we get to that, Jeff, if you can do some housekeeping, we earn a little extra cash for some gilded trades.
I don't think we're getting a cut of this. I only have one thing, and it's bittersweet. It's good on both sides. The Legacy Pit 10K, September 18th, 2021, in Frederick, Maryland, is sold out. Sold out.
Bittersweet is a weird way to say it. Sorry.
It's bittersweet because you can't get in, but it's nice that it's probably more sweet than bitter.
Also, the reason that Jeff's not getting a cut anymore is because I believe it's now 15K.
Is it? Did it get upped?
Yeah.
Wow. All right, Quinn, I'm relinquishing the job to you.
I heard that on a different podcast today when I was doing my dishes, and I can't remember which one. So thank you to whoever that was.
Cascading information from podcasts. Yeah. We should just like reblog other podcast content.
Dude, I mean, we kind of do that sometimes.
So it's a 15K. You can buy like 3 dual lands now. Is that how expensive they are? Maybe 1 Gilded Drake?
Yeah, it's crazy, the prices. I'm fortunate that I had a lot of my collection when I first started, but I just don't see how people are going to get into Legacy unless, I don't know, unless they do Secret Lair Reserve List or something absolutely silly like that, but who knows.
I definitely was looking at some Tundra prices because some doggy coins have gone up a little bit. But holy fuck, are they more expensive than the last one that I bought, which wasn't even that long ago.
It's like they're getting expensive. And if you look at like if you actually know things about money and you're like, oh, well, this is dumb, I'm going to sell it. Like, I mean, that's how I felt with Dogecoin. Maybe I'll be wrong. but I like reach back out to my cousin, who I think I've talked about on the show before. He has like a stack of dual lands and like he has like 8 copies of Force of Will. He's like, remember we used to throw these at each other? I'm like, I don't. And also I must have thrown them all at you because I didn't have any when I got back into Magic. And he is like, oh, so they just kept going up? And he's like, so if I don't need money, I like shouldn't sell them, right? And I'm like, in my head, I'm like, it would be better for the Magic community if we got a little more supply in here. But I'm like, no, probably not. And he's like, oh yeah, I guess let's just put them in a safety deposit box or something. So there's now like 6 underground seeds that are never going to see the light of day until he needs to, like a new mortgage or something. But yeah, it's just shit like that's around. If you need a force field, I got a line on a force field though.
Jeez.
I have a force field.
I hate that EDH deck. And I love that EDH deck.
That it's such a sweet deck. I love it. So Jack, if you don't know, I don't play a lot of EDH. And usually I would be like really spiky. Well, not really spiky. I guess I'd be a grifter. Like one of my favorite EDH decks is just like, I think it's called Slobad is the goblin, but it's sack an artifact to make an artifact indestructible. And the whole idea is just like resolve Yokohop or obliterate or some kind of awful effect. And then like indestructible a bunch of your artifacts and then don't take advantage of it and just play another destroy everything card and just until everyone like packs up and goes home. So I played that for a while and then obviously lost most of my friends. So then I switched to a life change deck. Like any cards that are like black or white or artifacts that swap life around, I play those and it's super fun. So, but I also have Force Field in all of my commander decks because it's just a sweet card. And
it's sweet art too. Like the art on Force Field is like kind of what I wish most Magic art is now. It's got this, I don't know, it's like that's that one with the person like holding up and then there's just like this like myriad of kind of red, blue, and
have you seen the colors? Have you seen the one where it's like a Mox Jet beside it? Because no, the art is actually like a continuation of Mox Jet.
Oh. It really reminds me of like the instructional booklet for like King's Quest. Anybody used to play King's Quest back in the day?
Blank what? Stairs.
Oh, man.
It always looked, well, now it looks to me like if they did like a throwback art series, like that could be Force of Will.
Yes, yes.
This would be wonderful Force of Will art.
Yeah. Oh, McBain sharing his screen now. He needs us to see this. This is great for an audio medium.
Yeah. Whoa. What is this person? This person actually kind of looks like a like these Neapolitan priests that little kind of little ceramic guys out of. But yeah,
we'll also link to this image in the show notes so that maybe if you're
no, don't do that. That's not fun. Just have the mystery in your mind. But yeah, the art like literally connects.
Hey, question. And maybe this is more like an IT support. Where are these show notes? I hear it on all the podcasts and maybe it goes back to my just like starting podcasts a year ago, but what's a show note? And where is it?
It's actually a joke that people say, and then they just edit the show and send it out. They never actually do anything. but that's most of the time. But generally when Quinn is actually a good show host and does his job, but on most of your apps, they'll actually be like a little script, just like there would be in like YouTube or something like that, that actually has links to things.
Oh, okay.
So that's what a show note is.
Post them on Reddit with the links.
If I were a paid editor, I would have tested this on multiple platforms. Jack, how do you listen to the show? That's a good question.
Well, being a Patreon member, I it's auto-downloaded through my Patreon. So, no, I listen to iTunes. And it just auto downloads and always make sure you do your 5-star review, people. it's funny. Like I've actually had what was it? Everyday Eternal. Julian even brings it up every now and then. I just did a review of the podcast because I was like, oh, this is great, and you know, I'll write a little blurb, and he mentioned once, he's like, hey, we'd really like to thank Franco Bulli. By the way, if you don't know me, I'm Jack Vanilla, better known as Franco Bulli on the internet. And he's like, we really like to thank Franco Bulli for giving us a 5-star review. And then years later, he's like, hey, somebody gave us our second review. I'm like, wait, what? And he's like, yeah, it always has been Franco Bulli for like a year. And then, you know, then somebody else finally gave them the second review. But
no one can top your review.
I don't know what they do, but apparently they matter.
Yeah.
Every podcast somehow, is like, please do it.
Well, so like another thing too is, and I mentioned this to somebody, what was it? I think it was, what's the Bryant Cook and what's their podcast?
Eternal Glory.
Eternal Glory. Thank you. Yeah. Like you cannot find that podcast. If you search like Legacy Magic, Magic the Gathering, like you will not find that podcast.
It needs to be SEO.
No, if you search like Eternal Glory, you'll find it along with a lot of other podcasts that are not related to Magic the Gathering. But it's because they don't put Magic or Legacy or anything in their description or the title of their show. Like even just throw in an MTG somewhere in your description and I feel like you're just going to get a lot more traffic. But in a review, if you type in stuff, I believe it helps people find stuff. And then obviously, you know, if it's a higher reviewed podcast, you'd think there's some algorithm that promotes that. So
yeah, I think there's like some search thing. I know the Dave Chang podcast, which I listen to, is always like, give us a 5-star review. And then they'll read questions. Like if you write a review and it's a 5-star review, and then you ask a question, like when they do their question episodes, like that's how they pick the questions.
That seems so disingenuous and shitty.
Yeah, it does. I don't know what this podcast is,
but that we're just beefing with
the David Chang podcast.
Yeah, that's like buying reviews. Oh, not buying reviews, but just
If you want to be on the show, though, chances are it's like a 5-star. They actually did read one that was a 3 out of 5 stars. Because it was like, I love this show, but sometimes the recipes are hard to follow, 3 out of 5, and then ask the question. And Dave Chang was like, wait, we need to ask you a question now. Like, what's hard to follow? I need to know this. Like, you got to give me more than that. And so they answered her question too. But I think it's just like, give us a review, and like, that's where they get the questions from. Which seems, they also have like an email address, so maybe they asked. I don't know.
You can send us questions at thecanadianthreshold@gmail.com.
You can
Jeff actually
wants to read them though. Give us a 5-star review and then ask a question in the review.
Just put 5 stars in your email and then I'll look at it. Should we?
Okay, Jack. Or I mean, yeah. Jeff, should we get keep us on track here. Keep us on track.
Yeah. Okay. So listeners of any episode of this podcast will know that I am a very big fan of Esper Vile and in another degree, Jeff Lynn specifically. But also Esper Vile. And Jeff is a very busy man. Well, we got the Pacific Northwest's Jeff Lynn himself, Jack Manila. And honestly, probably a premier, definitely a premier Esper Vile player in his own right. Franco Bulli.
And coming in from left field, it's Franco Bulli with the Aether Vial on turn one.
McBain, no one knows that joke. We talked about it before we started the podcast. Like, it's just for
us. Just leave it at that. We'll leave it at that. It's fine.
Yeah. No. Thank you, Jeff. That's very kind of you to say. Yeah, it's... I've been predominantly a paper player since I've come back into Magic. I started in 4th edition and then kind of left in Urza's Beaker. And then, what is that set? Destiny? Legacy's Destiny. Hammer?
Somebody correct me. That's Legacy, right?
Legacy is Hammer.
Saga is Gears. That's all I know.
Beaker is...
Yeah, Saga is
the Gears. Beaker is Destiny.
Yeah, man, those set symbols are fucking gas.
They are good. they're very clean. They're readable from a distance. Anyway, and I came back into Magic just because I wanted something to like stimulate my brain. Just like a puzzle, but and I had this image of what's the name of the card? It's like a something lemur, and it's my
it's the one that's a lemur, but it's because the artist got it wrong.
Well, it's actually the card I think is a lemur. I hope I'm pronouncing that right, but it's some sort of spirit, and they just received the card and they're like, hey, like this is this is not what we asked for, but the art's cool. And I just remember I had this huge stack of Magic cards in the top one, obviously with a rubber band wrapped around it. But the top one was always that card. And I'd see in this box that I had just stored for years. So I'm like, yeah, maybe I'll try that Magic game again. And then I think that week Vice came out with a, like a 15-minute like little documentary about Magic the Gathering. And I don't know, I just started playing again, started to make, Greenlight Games just down the road from me and here in Seattle. And I think I brought my old tricks, the combo deck with Illusions of Grandeur and Donate. And I added some white with some newer cards that I had found on Amazon. With just, I just saw, hey, Life Gain, this seems great. And I think I played Sean Yu in my first round, and it was Countertop Miracles. And I just kept casting stuff into Counterbalance, and he's flipping something, and then he played a Jace the Mind Sculptor, and I'm like, okay, I gotta read what this thing does. And yeah, it was just a culture shock. But
so what year would that have been?
When did Origins come out? Because I remember doing drafts of Origins, I think it was like 2014 2015.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. And I came into the shop one day, and people were talking about this card that had spiked, Lion's Eye Diamond. And they showed me the art, and I have this photographic memory. And I was like, hey, I have one of those. And the guy was like, oh, I'll give you, you know, X number of dollars. And I sold it to him. And then I bought my first Aether Vial deck, which was Modern Merfolk, and piloted that to a lot of success. And ever since then, Aether Vial has always kind of been one of my favorite cards. So,
good man.
And then, yeah, I have played a lot of things. I think my probably losing record at this point to McBain, but we always somehow play at Mox 1Ks and 3Ks. He probably knows me better as Elves.
Yeah.
Or I think that one time with Rug Delver that it was a win and in the top eight. And I think you just bubbled, though. But, yeah, that was Rug Delver. And then I hadn't really made a full Aether Vial switch in the Legacy. I did port over Humans and got a really good run at a 1K at Ballard once. And I still think that that deck is underplayed. Okay, Esper Vial, critically underplayed. I am by no means a premier Esper Vial player. Like, thank you, Quinn. Yes, I did bubble the NRG event, and I got 30th in the PTQ after going like 6-1 through the Swiss. And then, yeah, it's a really hard deck to play, but once you master it, I think it's really, really, it's good. And people look at it and they go, how does this deck work? Like, why is Charming Prince in the deck? This card is terrible. Like,
I think you look at half the cards in the deck and you're like, why are these in this deck?
And sometimes you got to cut those cards and put in better cards. But I think people just, all they see is Jeff Lynn's list and they go, this is the list and I will not try a new card. And I'm not saying that I'm the one that's created some of this change, but the weekend that Hull Breacher and Opposition Agent came out, I put in the deck. I finished 12th or something in the challenge. And then it was written up in the MTG Goldfish article. And they're like, oh, wow, this deck can play these cards. Those cards are not that great in the deck, but you've got to try them. And sometimes, like, I think I didn't really even see an opposition agent the whole tournament. So
maybe for the best.
Yeah, probably for the best. But I think Jeff's an excellent player, and I think he could probably win with a ham sandwich. He just happened to create something that suits his play style. And
have you seen some of his decks? They are definitely ham sandwiches, and he is winning. Like, he was playing that, like, blue-green Enchantress with what's that, like, blue enchantment that comes in and copies something, and you can, like, flicker it on your turn? And the, oh, God.
Is it the new one? The Thassa?
It's like Estrid's.
Oh, yeah. Estrid's Invocation.
Yeah. And Parallax Tide, which is, like, the whole thing is, like, Parallax Tide combo to exile all your opponent's lands. And it's like, Jeff, how are you doing this?
Yeah, I saw somebody posted it was, like, a Esper Astral Slide, and then the new Modern Horizons one with Shark Typhoon and Standstill, and it was just, no, Standstills were in the board, which I didn't get that one, but excellent player. I think a lot of his ideas are really good. I think a lot of his deck building, it's interesting, and you see it in his 5-0s over time. Like, some of the stuff that he tries, I mean, some of the stuff that you've talked about on this show, like, Weathered Wayfarer mm-hmm. and Fipplethip the Lost. And Fipplethip's an excellent card. I bought like 20 copies when they came out for a quarter. this thing is going to spike at some point. This is the Elvish Visionary for blue that you can, what's the other text on it? Like
when you target it, if it would be targeted, you like shuffle it in. And then also right. like if it comes into play from your library, you draw two cards.
It's right. Very exactly. weird. Exactly. But yeah, so this deck is just synergy, not a tribal deck, because I'm definitely partial to tribal decks, but it feels like tribal ETB creatures dot deck. Like mm-hmm. every creature in the deck has some sort of triggered ability, and the ones that don't, like Meddling Mage, technically they kind of have this triggered ability when it enters the battlefield, you name, you know, whatever. So anyway, it's a funky deck that people question how it wins, and it just does. Like it's really hard to play. You're constantly on a knife edge. You have a million decisions. I can sympathize with Quinn's desire to play Infect and have your rounds done in 5-10 minutes. I feel like that with elves. I'm just like, I don't want to sit here and go to time and every round.
You still want to take a lot of game actions.
Yeah, it's kind of like a combo deck where you're playing solitaire, but instead of like you're playing with your opponent, or you're not playing with your cards, you're playing with your opponent's cards, but you're stealing something or bouncing something or flickering something. But I mean, Jeff, with D&T, you've obviously experienced that a lot. But
yeah, and you'd think like, I mean, I've talked about it in here before too. Like sometimes you fire up a league with D&T and you're like, I'm putting in work. You're like, you know, I am grinding for that like 51-52% like matchup here. And you'd think like my time off would be better spent with something like Reanimator or Oops or, you know, something, instead of like, what if I like even up the ante a little bit?
Yeah. And there's no like win now button, right?
There's nothing. Like, you're like, I need a big thing. You're like, okay, I need like six turns.
So I people say that a lot. Like, hey, like I want a deck that's either like very proactive or it's just got this win now button. And I'll tell you, Meddling Mage against some decks is a win now. Like you just put in Meddling Mage game one against Doomsday and you're like, I'm going to name Doomsday. And they're like, well, scoop. Or like games two, you're like Doomsday. And they're like, all right, personal tutor for Massacre. And you're like, all right, put in another one on Massacre. And they're like, okay. So while it's not a win now in that you just
win,
the game is technically not over. But when your opponent knows that they don't have an out and you're just going to get beaten down by this 2-2 bear for the rest of the game, and probably a host of other weird friends.
And unlike every other deck playing Meddling Mage in the board or whatever, you have the opportunity to unfuck up a Meddling Mage. Meddling Mage Doomsday, and you're like, oh shit, this is like Ant or something. You're like, okay, like reset that, let's change it.
Yeah, there's a lot of, I think it's a very unforgiving deck that if you start to play, you will lose a lot in the beginning. I lost a ton. And there's just little edges here and there that you just start to see and you have to eke out. And one of them is, if you don't know what you're playing, even if you're pretty good at sniping what you think your opponent's on, like, okay, I've seen they went, you know, all right, like what's this start? It would be like a Scalding Tarn in the basic island, Ponder. And then the next turn, they go Flooded Strand into basic island, Brainstorm. Which weird sequencing, but this happened the other day. And then they went like Misty Rainforest in the Volcanic Island and cast a True Name Nemesis. And I had put in a Meddling Mage on Show and Tell because I'm like, this is a totally Show and Tell.
That was my name. My name was Show and Tell.
Show and Tell. And sometimes you've got to do that because if you nail the Show and Tell and it's.
Oh, your God.
And you're a god, and they're untapping and they're going to play a 3-mana spell. Like when I saw the lands getting tapped, I'm like, okay, you're not going to be able to cast Show and Tell. So what is this, Cunning Wish for a bounce spell? That's interesting. It's an incident, but okay, fair enough. And then they cast True Name, and you're like, well, nice tutu. It's name and Show and Tell. But
that's a very mature take on what your opponent's doing, because I will say from my side, in those situations, I'm like, this guy doesn't know he can't cast it. Not even considering that I could be wrong.
so anyway, but the point is like the edge of just not, it's a balance. The entire deck, you're on this knife's edge of What land do I fetch? If I draw a Strix, like, man, I really wish I would have gotten that non-base. It's just the entire time you're hanging on, and any little mistake, even something that you really couldn't prevent. Like, sometimes you just have to say, hey, I'm going to fetch all non-basics, and you have a wasteland. Great. Like, I'm going to make you use all your wastelands on all these lands, and hopefully I somehow get out of this. But anyway, it's one of the edges is obviously not to just cast a Meddling Mage and you're against a blue deck and you think, hey, I'm just going to name Ponder because I don't play any Ponders, because Meddling Mage, it's such a well-designed card because it's symmetrical. It's amazing if...
it's a fantastic card.
Stuff went back to that because... I mean,
just so we're clear, you are like original art Meddling Mage?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, yeah, just checking.
And then, of course, my entire deck is not in English and it's all in Italian. And yeah, exactly. So, and I don't do that. I don't do that to kind of angle shoot. It's just everyone has a personal choice on how they want to express their decks. And I travel to Italy every so often with my wife, and it's stop by a card shop it's my personal expression. But yeah, no, original art Meddling Mage, original art Baleful Strix. There's some original arts, no, like the Brainstorm. I did actually have one Italian Chris Rush Brainstorm from Ice Age, but I kind of like the Masks one a little bit more.
The Masks Brainstorm, yes.
Yeah. I have to ask, with the Italian Meddling Mage, I think the flavor judge is you need to name the other card in Italian. Do you do that?
The problem with the Italian translations is I've like shown my wife, I'll be like, hey, what does this card say? And it says like silly stuff, like Spell Snare is magic trap. That's still my favorite one. I mean, it makes sense.
Wasn't that Crater Hoof something really weird? I remember you talking to me about this when you were playing Elves one time. And you were mentioning the fact that like some of them are just like obnoxious or ridiculous names.
Yeah,
and there was one or two in Elves that just like did not make sense.
Well, that's a good one. Behemoth, Dogli, Zoccoli, Criterizi.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be, it's probably before Google Translate, but some poor person just got the English translation and then tried to put it into something else. Let me see.
Like Thumpy Foot Beast.
While you're looking that up, I just want to say, like, while you were describing being on this Knife's Edge, I could see, like, McBain perk up and the gears in his brain start turning. And I'm looking forward to us showing up to record and McBain, aka Legacy Dad, playing, like, the true dad, or maybe more of a Big Brother move, and just being like, hey, Jeff, I bought these, and just showing three pristine Gilded Drakes, like, laying out Esper Vile to be like, it seems like my thing.
McBain's already done that. He bought into D&T. He bought into Mono Green and Old School.
Hey, the Mono Green thing in Old School was a collective choice.
That was. And I think, honestly, the same thing kind of turns both our cranks.
Yeah. Well, I definitely... So as you were explaining this, like, this was kind of like some weird tangent in my mind where it went of like that desire of just like wanting to do the hard work and eke things out. And like having such a sense of like accomplishment for yourself in doing that. I was just like thinking to myself, for some reason I went here, I was like, man, this is like the ultimate description of why universal basic income is just like so much not a thing for so many people, where they're just like, no, you got to feel it. You can't just be given these wins. Like, you got to really work for it. You got to be given the shittiest little creatures, and you can't, like, you don't get any like dual lands, or maybe get like one dual land, but man, I got this Gilded Drake once, and they just go on for 20 minutes. You're like, wow, I guess you really like this shit, eh? Like, I could just give you some like red black reanimator that's super cheap and we'll get you those wins, but no, you really got to work for it. I don't know. That's where my brain randomly went for some reason, but I do appreciate the Knife's Edge. The last while, I've definitely been appreciating just like the ham-fisted punch in the face of Eldrazi and like these really aggressive proactive decks, where it's just like the early game is building your deck, and it's not about like how I'm sequencing my lands and things like that. That's the mid game, and then the late game is like turn five, and that's it. And there's something to be said for that, but I really like the kind of the going back to like Painter. Like, I'm sure you've seen me play Painter once or twice, Jack, where it's just like, I remember playing against, who was it? Who's the Storm player?
Johnson.
James? Johnson, yeah. James Johnson. And he was like game three for like a win in for top eight or something like that. And I had like three Goblin Welsers in play with like a Trinisphere and a bunch of other things and like a Phyrexian Revoker. He's like, it's like a machine within a machine that's like within an Enigma. And I'm like, he's like, I don't know what's going on anymore. And that's really what I feel like Esper Vile is all the time. And hearing you talk about it and seeing that kind of like smile on your face of just the blood, sweat, and tears that has gone into it, I definitely get that impression.
Yeah, I think you nailed it. It's more like a machine, but each piece goes and tries to find another piece, or it's, I mean, now that Jeff's left the room, sorry, audio podcast, but not visual, but it draws cards too. That's the other thing that really is attractive to me. Like Death and Taxes, I've played Death and Taxes before, and I played Eldrazi before too. And you just sit there and you're like, I'd like a little bit more. Like once you run out of gas, you're just out. Elves, you can run out of gas with elves, but like you'll just fuel right back up in like one glimpse chain that gets a little lucky, or, you know, a visionary in the Wirewood bounce visionary. It's as for Vile is Death and Taxes if you want to draw some cards.
And yeah, it's like Death and Taxes squared. Like it,
right?
It's one of those things where it's like Death and Taxes. You know, it's like, okay, I think I'm going to be okay. I'll pass the turn back, and then they play one more card. And you're like, oh, okay, now I got to consider that. Whereas like Esper Vile like pulls ahead even further, and like you're like, well, if I'm not going to be proactive here, I'm just going to get buried more and more and more and more, that much quicker. But the fact that half your cards say basically draw a card on them is huge.
Yeah, and then Soul Herder, obviously, it's not as much a creature as it's a planeswalker that has an end step activated ability of, like, activated ability of one of the other creatures you have on the battlefield. And, like, that's basically the, like, static ability that it has. And it's...
So, I honestly don't know some of the side cards of Esper Vile. So, like, what is Soul Herder? And give me some of, like, the interactions that come up.
Side
that
are just, like, card?
I don't know.
Soul Herder is a 3 CMC, 1 white-blue creature. It's a 1/1. And on your end step, you blink a creature. And anytime you exile a creature,
just
you
put creature a plus one plus. Be exiled.
If the creature would be exiled, you put a +1/+1 counter on the Soul Herder. So Soul Herder gets bigger. And then you get to blink all your toys.
Yeah. And whenever a creature gets exiled is important too, because if one of your creatures gets swords and it's not Soul Herder, it gets a counter. If you swords a creature, it gets a counter. If you exile a creature with Skyclave Apparition, it gets a counter. It's one of those things that I think I've only really played the deck on Magic Online, but having experience with a lot of other Vile decks and trigger decks and keeping track of what abilities you've had before with various other concepts, it's one of those things. I think in paper Magic you're gonna lose a little bit if you forget these triggers. There's a lot of other things in paper Magic that I think an astute player can pick up on. Like, I mean, just take the example before of, like, you know, island volcanic island. If you had kind of known the player, you'd be like, all right, this person's definitely not on Show and Tell. They've never brought Show and Tell here before. They're probably on Rug Delver. That's just kind of the normal going to paper events in your area. But even just picking up little hints here and there by mannerisms, people tapping their lands, untapping their lands. People do it on MTG all the time just to try and kind of fake things. Or they start to do it like they would in paper and then untap it. But I just feel like that stuff happens a lot more in paper. And with an active Vial on 2 and the Meddling Mage in hand, you can definitely snipe some stuff, which is...
You can just sniff out a Show and Tell player.
Yep, absolutely.
I have to say, as a Show and Tell player, I feel like you were doing a lot of good sniffing with the exact sequence you described, where you're like, why would you play the Brainstorm there? Third land, island. Well, we know what's going to happen here.
Right. Yeah. It's there's a player in Seattle who his playmat is a mouse pad. And I remember I sat down against him and I'm like, why would somebody have a mouse pad as their playmat? This doesn't make sense. About. And then I'm like, this is brilliant. They play with like no permanents in play, like four permanents at most. And yeah, it's kind of those little things where like you think that you're going to get some little edge by, you know, oh, I'm going to put red sleeves on my, you know, Death and Taxes deck. They're going to think I'm on burn or something silly like that. Like sometimes it works, but sometimes no. Sometimes it's like, I can sniff this out. So
my favorite, so the level five of that was when Kale was telling me he went to like an actual, like pretty big tournament. I can't remember what it was for, but he put his 15th card in his sideboard was like something other, some other deck. And he would always like kind of accidentally show his opponent at the beginning of the
round. Is that legal?
Well, like it, I don't know, whatever. Like he just kind of accidentally showed his sideboard card, whatever. People are always looking, but he would just kind of like, you know, oh, whoops, you know, I guess I'm that deck. And then just like be some total other deck. I can't remember like how much of an advantage it was, but he was like, he was on that level and he's like, it's just genius, man. You don't even need that 15th card. Like whatever.
The card was definitely that new Athreos, right? He's trying to get his reimbursement.
Probably.
Yeah, no, but we can certainly go through some of the cards.
Yeah. Take McBain on a tour here.
Yeah. Give me, I'm really, to be fair, I do know a little bit more, but I'm trying to like, you know, open up the conversation. Jeez, busted my balls.
Well, why don't we like back it up a bit? Like, I think, Jack, you've done a good job of painting like a picture of like how the play style is, you know, like with that, like you are trying to like kind of, you know, respond to what your opponent is doing or like proactively like trap them. But like for anyone who for some reason doesn't know what Esper Vile is all about, like what's the kind of, how would you describe it to someone who like just got into Legacy and they're like, hey, I'm playing this person and McBain says it's this Jeff guy. He's on Esper Vile. He's not very good at the deck. So if I can figure out what Esper Vile does, I'll probably get an advantage over him.
So what does it do? Well, like we talked about before, it's a machine. So it's every card on the battlefield has intrinsic value in that it's sitting there and can be blinked later, or it can also just attack you. Like these cards, some of these cards are not like Lightning Helix per se. It's not a burn spell and another spell like stapled onto it, but it's a creature that's going to get some value. And then eventually it's the way that you kill your opponent is you attack them, or every now and then you can mill them out by locking them or, you know, it. So it's not a control deck. It's not a tempo deck. It's not really an aggro deck either, but it can pivot into either one of those roles as it needs to. And it can kill pretty quickly too. If it needs to turn into aggro mode, it's got some really aggressive starts that you can just aggro and tempo your opponent out of the game with just playing creatures that just they just can't deal with. And then you can just bounce whatever threat that they were able to stick, because it's funny that like Delver's this considered this aggro deck, and then you look at the number of threats that they actually play and it's like, wait a minute here, like this is more like some, you know, anyway, it's a really hard question to answer because it can do a lot of things, and that sounds like a control deck. It sounds like you have all this agency, but sometimes you rip open your hand and it's just absolutely garbage. Like it's four lands. It's like four lands and a Charming Prince. And let's see what else we could throw in there. Like a Force Will. And that's like your mold of six. And you're like, well, this Charming Prince is going to scry. Charming Prince scries a lot. Like it is Mr. Scry. But it's just such a good card in the deck. So McBain, Charming Prince, one in a white.
I was going to say, I was like, okay, so for Charming Prince, I want to know like the floor, what it normally does. And then give me some examples of like, you know, it's the.
We were going to start with the floor of actually, he was going to read the card to you. So why don't we start there?
So the floor of Charming Prince is one in a white. When it enters the battlefield, exile target creature until your end step. The floor is when you do that and you just get blown out by a swords or a bolt on whatever creature you're targeting. So now you just literally played one mana bear that put a lightning rod on probably your best permanent on the battlefield, which the creatures that you're trying to blink, that's kind of what I was mentioning before. Every permanent on the battlefield probably has some intrinsic value if you can get multiple repeats of that enter the battlefield ability. So the typical cards you're going to blink are Baleful Strix, the two mana black and a blue 1/1 with Death Touch and flying. This deck's really a blue-white deck, but it splashes black for Baleful Strix, Plague Engineer, and then sometimes some sideboard cards, or really kind of whatever you want in the Esper colors. But the other modes on Charming Prince, of course, are Scry 2 and then Gain 3 Life. And it against Burn, Charming Prince is just absolutely awesome because it blocks all their threats. Most of their threats are 2/2s except Swift Spear, and they're attacking into a Charming Prince. You're probably not going to block because, again, you can probably blink it later and get the 2 life back. And anyway, but what it really does is it really helps the curve of when you go turn 1 Vial, and then let's say luckily you get to turn 3 and you have 3 lands and a Vial on 2 and you have a Recruiter of the Guard in hand. You can play Recruiter of the Guard, go get Charming Prince, and then you can either save your Recruiter of the Guard from a removal spell if they're so apt to do, and then or you can just blink your Recruiter of the Guard again and go get another creature. So effectively, it feels like you spent 5 mana to draw a card and put 3 power on the battlefield, but you really haven't, because with that blink of the Charming Prince, you can, blink of the Recruiter Guard, you can go get really whatever else you need next. And sometimes you don't really know what you need next. Like you're having to react to what your opponent's doing. Do I need to go get a Skyclave Apparition? Do I need to go get some sort of bounce effect? Typically by turn 3, you should have an idea of what your plan is, but if not, it's just the perfect curve card, and there's not a lot of 2-drops in the deck. So as you're taking that Vial up, you really kind of want to abuse it as much as you can with that mana advantage and leverage that against your opponent. So
tournaments is nice. Like in D&T, when you play, I mean, it shows up every once in a while as like a 1-of or something, but as a 1-of even, it's really nice for the times that you have like a Vial on 2 and a Vial on 3. You just hit a Recruiter, you just go get like a free Charm Prince on the way, and then like flip your Recruiter again. And yeah, in Esper Vial, being able to kind of baby reset anything, saving things from removal spells, scrying is the worst case. And yeah, I've definitely won games against Burn or, you know, other aggro decks when you just start like soul herdering it. And, you know, they're like, do I really have to kill this stupid Charming Prince?
Yeah. And again, that's kind of what I was saying. It's that card actually feels the most like what I said before, like a Lightning Helix. It's mm-hmm. like this thing that's just going to beat down your opponent and then gain you life. But it's the toolbox aspect of it, is that you have all these modes. And the one mode that's really interesting on it, which again is kind of how Gilded Drake is in the deck, is it's a creature you own. And you own Gilded Drake. So even if it's on your opponent's side of the battlefield, you can flicker it. It comes back on your side of the battlefield at the end step. And then if you have nothing to take again, you just sacrifice the Drake. But if you have something else to take, then you just take it again. And then if you can blink your Prince again or get another one, it's just really mean. And that's kind of the magical Christmas land of Gilded Drake. But if you maneuver yourself into that position, it comes up a lot more often than you'd think. So
it's such a weird text to be if you own. Like, I know they keep going back and forth on that stuff, and I think it's to avoid like stealing somebody's thing and then like taking it permanently. But it's just weird. What were you going to say, McGrain?
I was just going to say, I'm like, there was a lot of instances that you brought up there where it felt to me as though like Charming Prince was like the entire Alluren package in one card. Like you had particularly the part where you're actually saving some other effect, where your opponents are like spending their cards to try and stop your game plan. And you're like, actually, this is just furthering my game plan. Like you're really helping me actually.
Yeah, this deck actually feels a lot like Alluren. Actually fetching with this deck feels a lot like Alluren. We're still greedy enough to think that we can run 3 basic lands, 1 of each color. And I know in the past Alluren runs like, you know, 2 forests. I mean, depending on the build, but like a bug splashing white, two forests, like a swamp and an island, and probably never the plains, but this deck feels a lot like that in terms of fetching it. And then, but it's the same thing with going and getting the creatures or setting up your draws so that you're going to be able to sequence your creatures out, that you're going to actually accrue some advantage. Because otherwise, yeah, these things don't really do anything, just sitting there by their own. Like, you have to keep working them. So
this is a divergent from shitty creatures, but you have two Teferis in your deck. And I just want your honest opinion here. Like, there's a lot of people in the community who don't like the, like, those blanket, like, you can't do this effects that are not symmetrical. And this is one that I think is like kind of walking that line in terms of what people feel is reasonable or just like way too much of a fire card. And I'm just curious where you fall with this particular card.
Yeah, to very stupid. It's a terrible magic card.
If I like the on mute suspense there is like, what's going to be?
No, if Teferi was banned, I would not shed a tear. Like, some lists don't even play it. The plus one of playing a sorcery speed spell, Esper Vile doesn't use it. Like, we do not play any sorceries. Every now and then you'll see the odd,
like judgment,
counts as judgment. Yeah. But, Sabine's Reclamation, you can do instant speed. That's kind of fancy. You can kind of go into the Esper Mentor builds with kind of more of the bring back stuff from your graveyard effect, be it Unearth or those types of things. But really, the plus one's terrible. The minus, it's kind of resetting your creature, drawing a card, and then with the vial out, you can activate the vial and put your creature back in. So it has that aspect, and then it also just, obviously, the passive is silly, as discussed before. It's shutting off an entire color pie and way that people play spells is just not really fun. So I honestly don't know why they printed the card, especially at 3 mana. Like, at 4 mana, okay. 4 mana, I don't think it sees as much play, obviously, but it's definitely not good enough for 4 mana. But
Teferi and Esper Vile is really interesting, because like, if they like fixed Teferi and it was symmetrical, which I think like we kind of talked about, well, we've talked about a lot, and Jackie mentioned earlier effects, and I'm like, yes, that's fair. You know, like Meddling Mage, like, sure, you also can't play Source of Pleasures, fine. But like Esper Vile is like one of the few decks that it's like, oh, this is great. Like, you don't do things. Me, I got these two Esper Vile or two vials, and I'm gonna do stuff, and that would be like actually like really cool to me.
Yeah, that's kind of interesting. I could see that. It is kind of used to lean on, though. This deck does have a really good combo matchup, but in the blue kind of combo shells, if you land Teferi, it's all but game over. Most people scoop to the Teferi, which is not, you should never do this, because you have no idea if I have a force in hand or whatever. But it's a card that when I first started playing the deck, I was like, why is this in here? It just doesn't. Yes, I get you get to bounce something and put something back in, cool. But it feels, it's part of the like toolbox of resetting all your crappy creatures that have some ETB effect. And sometimes that's just good enough with the passive of, you know, not letting your opponent play magic on the stack when you also run Force of Will. So
I love how every card has like five different interactions that all tie to every other card. It's this big web of crap. And like the thing of like having your Meddling Mage and then Teferi bouncing their thing and be like, well, you don't get to play that anymore because I've named my mage with it.
Yeah,
like there's so many weird little interactions that are just so sweet.
Yeah, certainly that tempo aspect feels a lot like the Modern Humans deck with Reflector Mage, bouncing your thing and then putting in a Meddling Mage on whatever you just bounce. Like, that comes up a lot. And that's kind of part of the tempo aspect of the deck that you can definitely pivot into. And again, if you bounce a like a Reality Smasher, and then they rip another Reality Smasher, and you just put in a Meddling Mage on, let's say, Reality Smasher, it turns out pretty good. So
here's a serious question, Jack. Let's say I'm a D&T player and have some like budget constraints and stuff like that, and I want to play Esper Vile. Like, what are some of the things that are like the must-haves that you need to do? And what are some of like the spots where you could like skimp a little bit and still get that like taste of Esper Vile, or that woody flavor of the wine that is Esper Vile?
So the big one is Gilded Drake, of course. It's the number one question in the test and the Discord. And yeah, it's
I need Gilded Drake.
You do not need Gilded Drake.
Number one,
you could cut Gilded Drake. It's an awesome card with Charming Print. It's also, I think, probably was a critically underplayed card for a very long time. I had mine from my Merfolk days, but it's not, I mean, right now I'm looking, it's like $900 for two Gilded Drakes. No, like buy one Underground Sea over the Gilded Drakes. Like, the mana base in this deck is trash, and you need all of these fetch lands, and you need all of these dual lands. Gilded Drake is not necessary for the deck. Is it ideal? Yes. Does it have some really weird corner cases that come up here and there that you can, you know, exile bridges or Bridge from Below's by just putting it in on their draw step when they've... Yeah, because you sacrifice the Gilded Drake. You're like, oh, yeah, I actually don't want to target that Gravecrawler or whatever. It's got little niches like that that are sweet.
Are there matchups that you particularly lose ground on, or is it just like all of these properly pronounced niche interactions that you kind of lose? Like, or is it like Maverick is just atrocious all of a sudden if you don't have Gilded Drakes? Where are you like, if you had four in your sideboard, where are you bringing all four in? Like, oh baby,
perhaps four in your main deck.
Show and Tell. Yeah. I mean, Show and Tell is already a good matchup. Sometimes you can still get cheesed out turn two and you can't get that Meddling Mage down and they have a force for your force. But it's already a good matchup. So that's kind of where I'm like, yes, the card shines in these like Hogak and Show and Tell and Maverick to a certain extent. It's just, there's some decks where it's like not that great against, like Blue Red Delver. It's not that great. Like, what are you going to steal? The Whale? Like, the Whale's the best thing you can steal, and you're trading a 3/3 flyer for a 3/3 flyer that they're probably just going to Bolt or Pyroblast. And now you've just given them a 3/3 flyer and exiled what, four cards, maybe?
I've definitely lost to my own Gilded Drake a few times.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, let's talk about Skyclave Apparition. How many times have you lost to that token? That card's well designed. Like, it is very powerful white card. It can only hit a four drop, but if you don't have a way of getting rid of that token, if they somehow get rid of it, or you make some silly attacks and you have a Skyclave Apparition with like a three drop underneath it, and you just go, oh no,
it's like,
they did have the removal spell.
In attacks.
Thrown out. Yeah.
Someone Skyclaved my Teferi, which is, you know, justice. And then, you know, Injustice was they attacked with that and Thalia, and I was like, Soars the Skyclave, make a 3/3, block your Thalia. Here we go.
Yeah.
Those mistakes feel so bad. Like, I feel like playing D&T and probably Esper Vile is like kind of like the noob traps, I guess, you know, where people do things in a certain order and you're just like, oh, there's reasons you don't do that. And like getting a new card like Skyclave Apparition, like I've done that plenty of times. Like, you know, you're trying to get like F6 value and you're like Skyclave Apparition, hit your thing, attack. And then they cast a spell and you're like, oh, fuck. Like, everything I've ever done has fallen apart.
Yeah, it is definitely this house of cards that comes absolutely crumbling down. Like Meddling Mage on, oh, what I think their only removal spell is. And yeah, going back.
To me, that goes back to that universal basic income thing of like really working for it and appreciating it. Quinn's just shaking his head. For some reason, I'm sure I'm going to get all sorts of things for that. But I have no stance on it. But I definitely agree. Like Skyclave, I think when we talked about this in our year end wrap up review, and we were talking about different sets, like, and particularly Skyclave is just a, such an amazing card. Even like in the Oka era, being able to deal with an Oka with 12 counters on it is incredible. But the fact that it has this very real downside that creates this whole sub game is just like such a perfectly designed thing, as opposed to like the opposite of like a Teferi Time Reveler.
Yeah, it's, I mean, but with Teferi though, with that blowout attack step, if you have a Teferi out, yeah, you just swing for the fences, unless someone's got a Vial or something tricksy coming in. Luckily, not a lot of people are playing Shark Typhoon, typically only one in the ban list, but yeah, it's a, you're right. It is, I think from that set and probably from last year, it was the best card, I think, for Legacy, the most fair. People are not going to have an issue with it. Its casting cost is totally reasonable. I kind of wish they would do that more with creatures. Like, it just make them harder to cast, and you're gonna see less of it. Like, look at Leovold. Leovold dropped off the face of the earth. It's a totally fine card. Great card. But like, Hull Breacher, no. Why is that two in a blue? This makes no sense. Like, For such a powerful effect, you should kind of, as you're saying, earn it or
it makes no work sense. For it. You think of it, they would have like learned their lesson with Thragtusk. Like, single green? Come on, that's fucked.
Skyclave, like, standard. Skyclave is like, yeah, like never having cast one outside of Limited, I think. But it's a card where when I get got by Skyclave, I'm not like, oh, come on. I mean, I may be saying that to myself, but when I think about my opponent, I'm like, yeah, that's fair. That's reasonable play, you know. Yeah, like,
you got me. And it lines up so well against Legacy because, like, what's bigger than a four drop?
Yeah, not
really a lot. And a lot of times too, like when you're exiling Delvers and they finally get rid of your Skyclave, you're like I'm just like blink Skyclave. Here's a bunch of 1/1s. Like, guess what? This is a 2/2.
So it's fun with Soul Hardy. Like, I'm just gonna eat all of your permanents and convert them into like vanilla creatures.
The first stream I fired up with Skyclave, I was playing against Rug Delver, and I was like, there is no way for me to get back from this match. I am dead on board. And I ripped the Skyclave off the top. And that's just what I did. Just started blinking Delvers, blinking Goyfs, or just exiling Goyfs, and they just were left with these 1/1s and 2/2s, and you've got the Soul Herder that just keeps growing and growing, and then they just realize, oh, I don't really have any more threats left. So
the deck also has plenty of ways to deal with the leftover token, like through stuff like Baron, or like the single Flicker Wisp is in some, or like even Teferi is really good at doing that. Like, like when you're playing D&T and there's like a big token you created, you're kind of like, fuck, like I need to get like a sword or a flyer in here. But yeah, this, you actually have like free ways to get rid of it.
Yeah, definitely the Baron and Venser loops, especially with Caracas, you can just get rid of a lot of silly stuff. So
that's the stuff that really gets me excited. I'm just
Soul like, Herder Venser is so good. Like, when you're just slightly ahead and you just pinch him, and then you're like, okay, end of turn Venser, Soul Herder, like bounce land. And it's
like... Yeah, you rarely tick up a Vial to four, but if you're like out is Venser, or you are maneuvering the game into a position where you're gonna have like five lands, one of them is a Caracas and a Vial on four, like, you know. Nice knowing you. Some people like just see that coming, and you just search up end step Vial on three, you go get Soul Herder, and they see what land you have, and there's like, yep, nope, I'm not resolving another spell.
It's so beautiful.
And then reminds me of, like, do you remember like Jola said, like Legends Miracles back in like 2000 and I don't know, would that be like 2014 or something, when it was like they'd play like the one cavern and Venser for like the you know, mirrors, because you just loop your cavern Venser Caracas and just like deal with everything you need to.
Yeah, Joe. Great. Yeah, Joe was commentating the that great energy event, and as soon as I rip Venser, he's like, "All right, cool. Jack Vanilla is winning this match," and of course, Julian's just like, "Well, I mean, hold on a minute." He's like, "No, Venser, it's all over.
Go to the next match."
Yeah, and then of course I punt, and I'm just like sitting there. I'm like, "God, I got to get rid of this Teferi. That was a silly match too, because we just had both Teferis out, and it's, that was the first time I had done one of those melee Magic Online tournaments. That was, it's interesting. Oh, and also, like, thanks, Quinn. You mentioned I got ninth. So if you look up the stats, it says I got 10th. The 9th through 16th people get a loss at the end of the event, and then it reshuffles the entire order. And the event's over, and then after the Swiss, the 9th through the 16th get a loss.
Is there a purpose?
Sounds like wizard programming right
yeah.
there.
I think it is. I think it is. But yeah, no, I that weekend and then the following weekend, I played in the PTQ and got 30th. And it's just... Something clicks with this deck. It's not like this. It's a very steep learning curve, but then at a certain point, you just start hitting these like stair steps where you like flatline for a really long time, and then you just make this jump, and you'll see it in your like win percentage if you're tracking that. It's like you'll make these 3 to 5% jumps over time, and it's very noticeable, and it's little things too. It's realizing like, oh hey, I should be fetching for basics, or then. Realizing later, like, no, I can actually play in the wasteland. But it's to your question earlier, Quinn, to describe this to somebody new to the format, you can't. You would have to write like a 50-page player's guide. Even the 50-page player's guide that's out there for Esperville does not do the deck justice. It's awesome.
Shout out, Johan.
Yeah, shout out. We add stuff to it all the time. It's still just, it's just not there. There's so much you could add, and it takes a lot of practice, and if you don't stick through that first month of just living the 2-3 like league life, you're just not going to make it, unfortunately.
So is like the introduction to this deck Death and Taxes? Like, are you a Death and Taxes player, and then you evolve to this, or like, what are some other avenues that if I like this, I'll like that? Do you have any like adjacent decks?
I think Death and Taxes is a good one. If you've played Modern Humans, it's a good one. The hard part is your brainstorm play patterns. Jeff Lynn aggressively brainstorms, and it's because his mana is typically tied up. Like he'll brainstorm turn one, and it's dependent on the texture of your hand. But if you like humans in Modern, or even in Legacy, or Death and Taxes. I think this is a deck that you could probably do okay with for a little while, but there's just, I mean, Death and Taxes, you have the lines of what's on board, but you only typically have the two Recruiter of the Guards in your deck. And most of the time you're going to go get a Wisp, right? This, there's just so many game actions and decisions that you have to constantly... Yeah, it's just a really hard deck to articulate. I mean, even now I'm just struggling to come up with, like, in my head there's all these lines happening of, you know, okay, well, like, should I talk about this and should I talk about that, and it's just too much.
Yeah.
Whoever said it's the web of just BS is 100% correct.
I think for me
it's funny thinking about Charming Prince to me, because like you're kind of like, what does this do? Like, not you, like, you just look, anyone looks at that card and you're like, it does things.
It exists in Legacy.
But that really seems like, but also like when it does the right thing, it's like insane. Yeah. And like, I've been thinking about Charming Prince as like a microcosm for this deck as we've been talking. And also just that idea that like, no matter what you play, you should be familiar with in Legacy in any format, but like, who's the beatdown? And you know, you have decks like Burn where you're like almost always, or like Show and Tell, and then you know Infect is kind of getting a little further on the scale, then Delver is kind of like, you know, in the middle, but this seems like the ultimate like who's the beatdown deck, and that's like changing, you know, can change pretty rapidly, and you have the tools to just be like, okay, I'm like zoo mode, or you know, I'm gonna like play like hard control, or I'm gonna, you know, flicker and find a tool and tempo you out, and that's going to change, like, you know, depending on what you're doing and how your opponent is acting.
Yeah, it's that's 100% correct. And then you've also got like, who's the dirtle? Like, if you see like the like Esper Urion builds, you're just like, yeah, cool. My plan is to just put a bunch of permanents on the board and I'm going to all blink them with this five drop. Like it's when you resolve a Urion, the game's over. Like you have a couple of recruiters in play. You've got Strixes, you've got maybe a Charming Prince. And yeah, I'm not really partial to the 80 card builds.
That was going to be a question of mine actually. So when I was going back to that, like, how do I get into this deck and like, what's a budget constrained version of this deck? I was looking at the Yorion builds and honestly, like some of them had like less dual lands than the 60 card build, which seems weird. Maybe it's just a, you know, deck building thing, but it almost felt cheaper to me. And I was like, oh, well maybe. And then I was looking at the list and it was a lot more one ofs and a lot more like flexibility and four and silver bullets.
Drakes. Yeah, certainly. Certainly. Astrolabe had to go. Yeah, certainly Astrolabe had to go, but Esper Vial, the like four color Esper Vial with Astrolabe was sweet. Like it was absolutely sweet because you could play like four Strix, four Ice Fangs, and then you kind of whatever else you wanted to play. And because you had so much good stuff, you were kind of already being pressured to play Urion. And because you were playing Astrolabe, that kind of just gave you more incentive because you're going to have this little one mana thing to blink if everything else is blown up on the board. So I would stick with the 60 card version for now. Jeff, again, Lynn can win with a ham sandwich, and I think the 80 card versions have a lot of merit. Certainly the companion mechanic is busted. If Lurrus was still legal, I think we'd probably be playing a Lurrus, but in the main deck to kind of have that recursive graveyard threat.
Saddest thing that they printed such a dope white creature and then it got banned because the mechanic attached to it was too powerful.
Well, yeah, and also it's that hybrid mana. Like we could go back to Deathrite Shaman, like you know, pour one out for my homie in the elf community, but it's if that card was a green card, it would not have seen as much play. It was a black card.
Yeah.
Like that was the unfortunate thing. You could play an Underground Sea and cast this really sweet little elf creature that is like, yeah, you could do so much silly stuff with that in elves, like burn somebody out with 8 damage and, you know, end step upkeep. I'm going to hit you for 8. Oh, the card was sweet. But yeah, to go more into the budget constraints, the rest of the cards are honestly like relatively cheap for Legacy standards. You've got a whole host of fetch lands that are, they're kind of pricey, but they just keep getting printed into the ground. So hopefully those are going to come down. And luckily we're just playing mostly Tundras, although they've shot up in price, as Jeff kind of mentioned. And the one you see, like I said before, the mana base is just trash. Like you're trying to resolve a blue and a black spell that you're splashing on turn two. So you've got to go fetch your splash color turn one. And then you're also trying to cast these like one white spells, and yeah, it's a train wreck.
I could easily see like
it works.
I could easily see like playing like a Watery Grave and what is it, Godless Shrine, and just being like, you know, whatever. That percentage of the time, I'm gonna go get that thing, but it works.
I got my
Charming Princess back up for that life gain.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It is not. I don't think you're a dog to just straight aggro that these shock lands are really going to hurt you that much. Like you have a pretty fair Delver matchup. I mean, everyone says that. And of course you can still get Delver Days Wasteland. That's just magic. I mean, that's why Delver's good. But the rest of the mana base, we are running a chunk of basics, right? One of each. And then for full greed, 2 wastelands, and you can just lean more on those. You can also, I tested the new from Zendikar, the clone thing on the front face. It's a clone, and it's like 2 in a blue
glass mimic.
I mean, I just liked it because hey, you can go fetch up an ETB tapped island. That sounds cool, or you can just clone all these creatures that have this ETB effect that even the clone effect still means it pops off the trigger. So
play it as a land, flicker it later.
Yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely. When I first saw that, or first realized that, it was just like, oh, this card is actually sweet. And I've seen it pop up. It's good. And then the sideboard's like relatively cheap. Force of Negation and obviously the four forces in the main are a little pricey. But if you just get rid of those Gilded Drakes, the deck's not too bad.
I think part of it is that like often people kind of start in one spot and then they like moved other decks and things like that. And there's a lot of overlap with a lot of other things that people could be doing. Like you mentioned Modern and some of the overlap there. Like I think Gilded Drake's the only thing that really stands out as totally unique, that it was like, from my perspective, it was like the Imperial Recruiter of its day, where everyone's like, oh, like Painter's so sweet and it's a cool deck, but like no one plays it because Imperial Recruiter's randomly like $250 or something stupid.
Right.
And that just controlled, that was always the little asterisk on the side of that deck. One of the things I just want to kind of like, I don't know, go a little bit deeper on, but you mentioned it at the beginning about how it's criminally underplayed. And to me, this kind of goes back to this conversation that the Dead Format had with Tom Hepp recently, where he said, he's like, I don't pay attention to challenge data because it's really just the same like 40 or 50 people who are able to play those events, who play those events, and they play what they play, or like plus or minus two or three decks. And to your point of how complicated of a Rube Goldberg machine this deck is, there's really only like five or six people who can play it. So you get into this instant of like, well, it's criminally underplayed, but there's only so many people who really play online right now who can put up results. And it's just like, it's very unlikely to see a lot of results for this. And that's the same with a lot of these kind of Fringer legacy decks.
Yeah, I'd kind of preface your statement with, it's a certain amount of people who want to play it. Like what Jeff said earlier, when you're signing up for that challenge and you're going to play Esper Vial, like that is like a commitment. It's the same reason why like some people just don't play Oops All Spells. Oops All Spells is still great. Like it was doing really well in the Oko Rug Delver meta. Where'd it go? Like, is there more Delver? Is there more spell-based combo hate out there? I don't think so. Right? Like, so why is Oops not seeing any more play? It's a great deck, but I certainly don't want to fire up a challenge with Oops.
As someone who is like a self-identified degenerate, like, yeah, I'm like, this is a little too far for me.
Yeah, I think the same thing goes with like Reanimator. I remember that one of those challenges when I secretly knew I was bringing Reanimator because I don't know what level I was on, but I was doing it. And then like Quinn showed up in his classic form, like quite hungover. And he's sitting there like shaking, trying to put his like sleeves infect deck up. I'm like, you want to play Reanimator? Come on, come on. He's like, do I? Like, I don't know. And then eventually convinced him. But yeah, there's certain things like, this is obviously a hobby that we enjoy and love. And like, there's certain things that you want to get the most noodles out of it that you can when you do it. And more often than not, I think it's a general consensus that like playing Oops All Spells does not maximize noodles for basically anyone. And there's a number of decks that kind of fall into that category. But again, when I hear Jeff opine for literal years now about Esper Vial and to have you on, Jack, and to hear you talk about it, like I can definitely see why, regardless of kind of like where it sits in the 45 to 55% win percentage on Magic Online, it's just like, I will sign up with this any day of the week, as long as I've had some sleep, which is great to see.
Yeah, the really good Esper Vial players, and I'm not among them, although I have had a lot of really good finishes. The really, really good ones, their win rates that they claim, and of course everyone claims whatever win rate and they can sample like cherry pick the data, but some of them I definitely believe it. It's extremely high. Like when they're cooking with the deck and it's everything's just clicking and they understand every single role and every single matchup. They know exactly what they want to get when it's one of those level up moments. I think I'm at least two or three stair steps away, but it's just work at that point. Like it's just putting in the hours and getting there. But to kind of the point of another critically underplayed deck that I've been struggling mightily against is the Rug Food Chain lists. They feel like Snoko or Rug Delver from the last meta where you just have to answer these weird threats, and then they have this weird like combo, like they kind of feel like the Snow Day Snoko decks, where they have this like combo finish out of nowhere that you have to prepare for. And then they're playing Uro, and then they're playing these Ice Fang Quaddles that you can't attack into. And like some of their just dead cards are also just like not that bad on their own. But anyway, that's, and it just came out of nowhere. Like, what new card was printed for that deck that just like pushed it to the, you know, the forefront of the Legacy format? Nothing.
I noticed that too. Like when the God accounts were live, and I hadn't really thought about Food Chain, and also I don't know what happened. Cause I felt like most of the cards, I guess Uro, you know, last time Food Chain was sort of in the mix. I remember I'd play Food Chain back in the day and be like, sometimes they get you, and other times you counter the Food Chain and then deck doesn't do anything.
Right.
But yeah, all those cards exist in the Oko era though.
Right. Yeah. I mean, Uro is not even like a combo piece. Like Lurin players, like Uro is great. It's everything you wanted.
Yeah.
It's this great plan B. It's better than Stoneforge Mystic. And it's like, you can also just draw your deck instant speed on the stack. But yeah, Food Chain Uro is just there. Cause I mean, why not? Like let's present a threat and an axis that's going to be impossible for your opponent to deal with. And then once they do deal with it, okay, hey, oops, I also had this. So, and then Squee's been out for however long Dominaria has been out. And it's
such
like
a sweet addition.
Yeah, sweet.
My opponent cast Squee before the Food Chain. And I'm playing Infect. And I'm like, okay. And I like chip in for damage. I can't really go for it. And the untap and the resolve Food Chain, I can't fight the Food Chain. And I'm like, oh no. Like, this is not what I thought was going to happen. And then they just comboed me out. And yeah, it's funny. Yeah. I was thinking about this while I was playing, and I actually meant to bring it up like a couple episodes ago and then kind of forgot. But yeah, like it seems like this Food Chain deck came out of nowhere and it just seems harder to beat now than it did. I don't know why.
So many axes. Again, like you have to fight the graveyard. You have to fight, like, even some of them are running some planeswalkers. You have to fight even some of the, sometimes they'll just cast like, hey, I've got two of these walking blisses. I'm going to just cast one for six off these noble hierarchs and kill a couple of your dudes. And then just next turn, I'm going to pump it to a 2/2 and just start attacking you. And as a person who plays a lot of X1s, you're just like, okay, well, I'm not really going to beat this until I find a clean removal spell. But yeah, I don't know. The new set didn't really give us a whole lot. I think Callous Blood Mage, 2 and a black, ETBs, it's a 2/1. You can draw a card, lose a life, create a pest, which is a 1/1. When it dies, you gain a life. And then the final ability, Exile, target graveyard. I think that card is incredibly playable in Esper Vile.
I was thinking that too. I was looking at picking some up on Magic Online. Because yeah, like Remorseful Cleric was never really quite there. And it's something that like you don't really want to sack something for. I mean, having it on 2 is good. But having it on 3 and being able to repeat it along with another draw ability is very strong.
Yeah, it's the charming prince of this set where you look at it and you're like, this doesn't do enough. But then you look at every case where, like, you know, it could even be like main deck graveyard hate that's not terrible. Mm-hmm. They can pivot into this like pseudo young pyromancer pumping out a token that's gaining you life and blocking a Goyf every turn, or you know, it just turns into a really kind of shitty Baleful Strix where it can draw a card and you lose a life. But
just start playing Phyrexian Rager.
Oh yeah, Apocalypse Art, obviously. But yeah, that like I played when I was in my lost period, what between Painter being banned and me discovering my love for Life of the Loam and Tabernacle of the Pendril Veil. I played Food Chain, and that's what I played at the big Las Vegas event, and it just had an atrocious combo matchup, particularly things like Show and Tell or Show and Tell decks in general. And so I was just looking at one of those Rug Food Chain decks and was like, yeah, still is to Show and Tell. there's certain things that you just have bad matchups to. When I've perpetually been, almost all my Legacy decks are almost always scared of Show and Tell. So when I heard you say, Jack, that like you're like Show and Tell's a buy, like we have so many good cards against it, like unless they get really lucky and we get unlucky, like we're gonna win. I would love to be
Yeah, it's not a buy. In all fairness to show and tell players, Quinn aside, it's not a buy. It's close though. Oh, it's really close. And then Elves feels really good too. But that's just from my seat. I think from an Elves pilot, like, you just can sniff what they have. Like, yeah, this is a natural order hand, or this is a glimpse hand. And then you just have to hit that meddling or that plague engineer, and then you're just good. So Slivers, worst matchup for Esper Vile. Absolutely atrocious. I don't think I've ever played Slivers. So
if you're playing you against Daniel, Slivers, you're fine.
Yeah, it's always Daniel and you lose.
Yeah, and to be fair, like, now that Harmonic Sliver is unlocked on Magic Online and actually works with Show and Tell, I think it's probably the best deck. But
they fixed it
today. Yeah.
Damn.
So
even more Daniel in the list.
I've been talking about a critically underplayed deck. Like, Slivers is great.
Tribal, Aether Vial, Force of Will.
Lords are already pumping everything out of Plague Engineer range. Like, yeah, it's all good.
All right. I think Jack, if you have anything else, you can add this after this. But I have a question, because you mentioned being as an Elves player formerly, and probably sometimes still, sniffing out Elves and being like, oh yeah, you know, I can like sense what hand they have, and then I slam that Plague Engineer. Do you feel like a little bit like inside, like your heart breaks? Because sometimes I do that to Infect, and I'm like Blighted Agent. And like a little piece of me like dies. But do you ever feel that?
I honestly got so fed up with Elves with Plague Engineer that I think I just kind of did this, well, if I can't beat them, let's join them. And then that's kind of what actually kicked me over to Esper Vile.
Oh, so it was like an Anakin Skywalker.
It was exactly that. But I'm not even sure who's the good guy anymore, because Elves is just silly now with Allosaurus Shepherd. Even now, there's wading through all these Plague Engineers. Isn't Plague Engineer still the like most played creature in Legacy? It was for a while. And that was
after Delver, I think. Yeah.
I think it's even higher than Delver. I don't know. Someone can look that up. But it's anyway, I do feel bad. There's a friend of mine who does a lot of the data collection as well, Testacular. I believe he's down in Oregon. We see each other every now and then on challenges and online. And yeah, with Esper Vile, I do feel bad, but I think as the Elves player, you just kind of have to take your lumps. You're like, yep, this card exists. I just have to have an answer to it. And yeah, I mean, you can still combo people out. Like, you can still play Null Sentinels and then just, you know, play a bunch of insects, and you've got some, you know, Dryad Arbors in your deck. So every now and then, like, Plague Engineer only hits a creature or two.
Yeah, and you start playing like morphs. Like, it's real.
Elves is still a tier one deck right now. Like, it's a top deck, and
with Shepherd, Plague
Engineer is still like highly played, and Elves is great. So yeah. Like, sure, it might be like a little bit flippy floppy in certain instances, but I don't think it's nearly a problem.
No, I think Elves is the best combo deck right now. It's got a good Delver matchup, and Doomsday really can't claim that all the time, but I think Elves is really good. And Elves also looks intimidating. You've got all these like triggers and shenanigans with Quirion Rangers and Wirewoods, but you just get a little bit of practice, and it's honestly not that bad. First time I saw it being played, I think I saw Reed Duke playing it, and it was one of his Channel Fireball videos, and I was like, man, this looks like a absolute ball. You're drawing all these cards, you're casting green spells, like, yeah.
Elves is the deck. I looked at Gaia's Cradle and was like, this does look like a thing I'd like. Not going to go down this path.
Yeah, that's, I mean, that I think is the real dagger for a lot of people. Like, Gaia's Cradle is just like not a deck, or not a card that somebody can purchase right now.
All right. Well,
I'm sure there's some like back room doing like, you know, Guild of Drakes for Gaia's Cradle trades.
I mean, Gaia's Cradle now, like, you can, four Gaia's Cradles is like, one Esper Vile list.
Okay, hold on. Maybe I don't know the
All right, McBain, while you look that up, which will not be gas, I'm going to suggest that we move on to things that are gas and finish off that way. Jack, I know you know we do that's gas, but I'm not going to put you on the spot because we're just shifted into it and everyone else has notes down. So, Jeff.
I also didn't mention this when I sent the email. I was listing out some things, you know, we're going to talk about. I didn't list that's gas. So we're putting you on the spot.
This is how we figure out if we know Jack listens, obviously, but does he listen all the way till the end? We're about to find out.
Just cut yeah. Oh, no, no. I'm good. I got it. Right. Yeah, my that's gas is the legacy data collection group. It's a chunk of work. It isn't, it might seem like not much, but it makes those 6, 7, 8 round tournaments turn into like 12-hour days sometimes. And it's a lot of fun at the end. It's a lot of fun watching random people in the O2 drop bracket playing whatever shenanigans, but it's all the people in there are gas. I just have to shout them out. I think that effort started by Joe Dyer, I can't say that it contributed to Astrolabe, Oko, Dreadhorde getting banned, but it certainly didn't hurt. I think it got eyes on a lot of the problem. And I mean, like you said, McBain, it's just challenge data and just PTQ data, but over the course of the months where they build up like thousands and thousands and thousands of matchups, I think it does start to paint a picture of what's really going on with the format. So
it gives us like something beyond speculation to be like, hey, this is probably an issue for sure.
Yeah. And like, I mean, like going back to Elves, like there were weekends where Elves is like 30%, and it's not just like one person had a problem. It was like a dozen people just did not do well that weekend. But then when you look at some of these other decks, you're like, wow, this is always 52 to 55%. Like something's here. So anyway. Yeah, that's my that's guess.
Right on. Jeff.
I wanted to shout out a friend of the pod, local boy, Ben Quendrink. I wrote down a pronunciation key. Ben _ Verino on Twitter. I think also on MTGO. He just got married last week. And big congratulations to Ben and Jordan, I believe. I have to look that up though, because it'll be really bad if I get that wrong. But I haven't seen Ben in a while, obviously with COVID stuff going on, but look forward to playing against him again at the weekly when we're back.
Well, yeah, congrats, Ben. Congrats to Ben. Anyone who plays in Vancouver, I think, knows and likes Ben.
Yeah, he's great. Except, you know, when he's playing High Tide and then he just crushes you because you can't.
That's what he's the best.
Yeah,
that's how I want. If I roll up to the store and someone is like, you know, same thing, playing cantrips, I'm like, oh fuck, is this show and tell? And then you're like, upkeep, like what?
That's reset? A lot of islands.
Oh,
I will tap okay. All my islands.
Yeah.
No, he's great. And some of the photos that he had shared of just like we had. I don't know, Jack, if down in Seattle you guys have cherry blossoms, but Vancouver is just like, especially like East Vancouver where I live, it's just cherry blossoms everywhere. And the photos that people get are just incredible right now. And he had some great ones for his wedding photos. So
yeah, they're just really pretty. They're like little clouds on a tree.
They do have the exact same climate as us. So chances are good. I just want to throw that out there. Shift. As the geography podcast, I thought you would know that, McBain.
Yeah, no, it's definitely south of Burnaby. You can still get some cherry blossoms here and there.
Whoa, dropping the Burnaby reference. Look out. Did his homework.
McBain, what's yours?
Burnaby, no. I want to shout out a friend of me of the show and former guest, Fish Duggery, for our friend Elliot. He had a pretty solid run for the challenge last weekend, playing what I said looks like a vintage Delver list, which was like this bug Delver list that had the Chain of Smog combo in it, that I'm sure only went off once or twice, but you know, it kind of, it's there, it's part of the thing. So solid run for him. Like, he's always kind of experimenting and trying things. And again, nose to the grindstone on Magic Online. But I was going to do a tangential shout out to the people who collect all of the data, Jack, you being one of them. So you already jumped on this one, but again, it's a huge effort. And like, as someone who loves like actual good data to help inform decisions and not just kind of shoot from the hip with my opinions, I love the work that they're doing and the fact that it's like one, so such good data, like that it has actually some good analytics behind it. Two, it's really timely. Like, it just comes out right away. And then three, it kind of like holds the community together again and just kind of helps people adjust to things, particularly if they're not playing a lot. You can kind of like, if you're taking a break or doing whatever, you can kind of keep an eye on how things are doing. And it helps people who want to get the most utils, to use my earlier phrase, out of their evening of playing some cards as they can. So again, shout out to Fish Dugry and then Jack and everyone else who's doing the work.
Yeah, and but it's way easier than you think. Like, even just popping into the Discord and saying who you played against is a huge help to us. Like, we're scouring Twitter posts of people that are just like, hey, I played this. And it's so great now that people like actually post what they played and their wins and losses. And we can just go back in and look at the current standings and find stuff. So please, if anybody out there has even thought about it, like, there's many different levels that you can help with the data collection. Like, there's Doshi, the Doomsday troll's not the right word,
but we're familiar. Like,
yeah.
He's an artist, I think.
Artist is a good way of putting it. He'll just drop in every now and then from his Doomsday Cabal and be like, hey, these are the people that played Doomsday and these are other people that I know and here's what their opponents are. And sometimes, like, if it saves, you know, 10 or so matches that we have to watch at the end of the tournament, it's great. Like, it's a huge help. So please join if you can. Every single person makes it go exponentially faster. That's probably not accurate, but it definitely goes a lot faster.
As you say, Jack is a great Esper Vile player. You kind of sized up McBain, heard him talk, and anticipated what his last gas was going to be, and we're just like slamming that meddling mage to be like, no. Mine, as a less intelligent player, is more reactive. When I saw Jeff filled his spot with Ben, I decided that I would, that's gas, Jeff's dog, Roy, turned 12 today. So Roy, if you were listening to this podcast, remember who the number one human in your life is, the person who shouted out your birthday. Now your owner, tragic.
You just got to see him not that long ago too.
I did. And that's the first dog I've pet in a long time because of COVID. and it made me incredibly happy. So shout out to Roy because his birthday, but also because that was a real boost for my my happiness.
He had a good birthday. We went to the beach this morning and he played in the ocean and he had some breakfast and he got home. He had some steak for dinner.
And now he got a shout out from someone who loves him on Canada's number one legacy podcast, as far as we know.
In the show notes, can we add that one photo of Roy down at like Crescent Beach?
He's just, I don't like, think you could put photos in the notes.
I think can we like link the notes not existing?
Yeah, we can like,
can we like link to it?
Upload it somewhere, I guess. Yeah, sure.
I'll put it on the Reddit post for you.
It's all a phenomenal photo.
Which one?
The one so where he's like it's like a,
I'm gonna flood, say we'll sort this out later. There'll be a photo of Roy on the Reddit post. Before we wrap up, Jack, thank you once again for joining us. I was going to say this is a spoiler, but it's not, because in real life, people will listen to the intro before they get to this point. Thank you for one, guesting on the podcast, but two, being my like personal favorite guest. I don't like to play favorites because obviously we've always had friends on. But the first guest to do their own intro song, the bar is high.
No, that was something else. I was up here. I was just like, man, I should try and do what Quinn does. And wife came up and I'm like, shh, this is the song for the potty I'm going to be on in a week or two. No, thank you. Thank you for having me. This was an absolute pleasure. Hopefully I didn't bumble and stumble through Esper Vile too much, but although
it was wonderful, in real life,
it happens a lot. So
yeah, if people are like bumbling and stumbling, we do a lot more of it than you did, and they're still here. So before we leave, could you bumble and stumble and let us know where can people find you online if you're so inclined to tell them?
So again, Franco Bully on Twitch and Franco Bully 33 on Twitter. Franco Bully is not my name. Again, Jack Vanilla. Franco Bully means postage stamp in Italian.
I didn't know this.
I just thought it was a funny name, and I was creating my MTGO account. I'm like, yeah, Franco Bully. That sounds like a person's name. And people all the time are like, hey, Franco. I'm like, yeah, hey, how's it going? Franco Bully, MTGO, and Twitter, and all the places. But I really don't follow anybody on Twitter. I think I follow one Twitter thing, a tweeter.
Literally just our podcast. I looked the other day and I was just like, wow, well, what an honor. Jeez.
Well, I mean, you guys post, you're like, hey, we're going live in 3 seconds on Twitch. And I'm like, oh, man.
Being unorganized has paid off for us, clearly. Yeah. All right, McBain, where can people find you?
You could find me at Servant Painter on Twitter.
He can't even. He's not even close to slipping up anymore.
This is a joke.
It's gone now.
People who jump in on like episode like 30 are going to be like, "What are these guys talking about?" Jeff, where can people find you?
I'm on Twitter at JeffDKK,
And I'm on Twitter at Quinomori. You can find us all on Twitter at Canadian Thresh. And unless there's anything else from anybody, we will see you all in two thresholds. Thanks so much for listening.
Mamma mia, mamma mia, mamma mia, mamma mia, mamma mia, mamma mia.